Hello and welcome to the Tank Slappers podcast, Autosport and the Motorsport Network's podcast for all things two-wheeled. I am your host, Lewis Duncan, and joining me as ever is Oriol Puigdemont. And Yuri, we're done. Season is over, finally.
And we are over also.
In need of a holiday.
But then, in 3 days, we have the testing.
Oh, good. 2022 starts, this week. Fantastic. But well, that's a podcast for another time. Of course, it was an emotional weekend. It wasn't just the last day of the season. It was the last day of an era in MotoGP. Valentino Rossi has retired after 432 Grand Prix, 26 seasons dating back to 1996. His career is 30 weeks older than me. That shows you how long he's been going. And just before we came on the podcast, we were just trying to discuss sort of Rossi's best races, what we thought Rossi's best races were. I don't think Valencia 2021 will go down as his greatest of all time, but it was a very, very good ride for him, and it was a nice way for him to end his career. You were there in Valencia. It was almost the perfect send-off for him because he had a great final race. He said it was the best race of the season. If you look at his lap times, you know, he was quite comparable to people like Jack Miller, Joan Mir in front of him, you know, who fought for the podium. So his, you know, his speed was never in doubt. You know, he got through into Q2 straight from FP3, 10th on the grid. You know, he was 8 tenths off pole. But if you go rewind back to 2016 at the start of this current Michelin tire electronic era, 8 tenths off pole would have put you fourth on the grid. And I think this highlights that Rossi never lost his speed. It's just everything got so much harder. Everything got so much closer that if you're 1 or 2 tenths off the pace. Yeah, I think Franco Morbidelli was quite interesting. He caught up to Rossi and he said, I didn't want to attack him, but then I thought I would have to do something. But he found that Valentino was unattackable. He was too quick. So from that point of view, it was fantastic. And I guess looking at the bigger picture, it was the perfect send-off because his rider, Pecco Bagnaia, won the race. You know, it very much felt like a passing of the torch, you know, the old era into the new era. Rossi's legacy carries on with Pecco.
Yeah, 100%. Let's see what the future brings for Frankie.
Valentino, of course, the outpouring of support for Valentino and messages was, I was thinking about this, you know, I remember when Schumacher retired for the first time. And of course, different, you know, it wasn't quite into the social media age and things like that. But I just don't remember even Schumacher getting the same level of love and support from the world. You know, it wasn't just MotoGP. It was all over the world for Rossi's retirement. It was an incredible thing. It just showed how deeply Schumacher Rossi has touched people, you know, the hearts of people over the years.
Yeah, in my opinion, and I understand that a lot of people can disagree, but I think they are impossible to compare, and I'll try to explain. While before Schumacher, we had Senna, we had Hunt, we had a lot of different, let's say, game changers of the Formula One in the Formula One history, while in MotoGP, in the motorcycle world, Rossi is Rossi and will always be Valentino. So, of course, we had Varishin, and it was another dimension, and we still remember Varishin. We had Hellwood, we had Agostini, but it was completely another story. Valentino was the most recognizable icon. It was an icon, a way of life. Everybody was pushing for him to win. From the 85-year-old grandmothers to the 6-year-old grandson. So everybody was pushing for him. That's what, in my opinion, makes him different than, for example, Schumacher.
I mean, if you look at, I'm sure people will write in if they didn't like Rossi, but if you look at the kind of, if you look at Schumacher in his prime, he still wasn't hugely popular. You know, he's very decisive figure, whereas Valentino, whatever Valentino has done, has always been, he's always been God.
Yeah, you know, because that, I mean, he was funny.
Yeah.
He was very funny.
This was the thing. If Valentino has made millions and millions.
He is funny.
Yeah. You know, Valentino's made millions of pounds and he is a superstar, and yet he still, instead of going to Hollywood and doing this, that, and that thing, he spends his weekends at the ranch, you know, with his riders. Yeah, he's very down to earth still.
But apart from that, all of that, which is very, very important, he has this natural magic and nobody has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he's funny, he's laughing all the time, he's very smart, he's very fast with all these ingredients all together in one single athlete or sportsman. So that's what makes him completely different from and special, more different than the others.
For sure. I think the only thing we can say to that is grazie, Valentino. Thank you for all the memories. There was a race, of course, that weekend, although from the television coverage, it might not have seen that way. Won by Bagnaia, and I think a real statement, because not just from Bagnaia, from Ducati in general, you know, Valencia has never been seen as a Ducati circuit yet. They were 1-2-3 on the grid, and for the first time ever, were 1-2-3 in a race. And quite rightly, people like Joan Mir, people like Fabio Quartararo, the 2021 world champion, admitted they are worried. They are worried about what Ducati can do next year. Pecco and Jack Miller spoke about this in the press conference. They were asked about what needs to be corrected on the bike, and they were like, well, with more or less the same bike as last year, we have made a big, big step. And if you kind of look at all the other manufacturers, Ducati seems to have been the one that has come through this development freeze very well. They come to the end of it in such a strong position that they almost don't need to risk doing too much radical to the bike over the winter, because they have got the perfect bike. It works everywhere. It's quick. The riders know how to ride it, which is the most important thing.
I spoke with somebody inside Ducati, an important person in the structure, and he told me, listen, we are very happy because both, not only the two official riders, but also the Pramac riders are very, very, very happy. And we are very pleased because with the lineup change that we had last year, the new riders, the young riders we got, especially Pecco and Jack, were really, really, really open-minded. So they have been trying to make the most of the, let's say, the best parts of the bike. And at the same time, they have been working on trying to improve the weaknesses. Mm-hmm. But without being obsessed on them.
Yep.
So, and that's what, from this person's point of view, has been the game changer.
Yeah, it's interesting because that almost sounds like what Casey Stoner spoke about at the Algarve weekend. He spoke about, you know, he didn't see the point of riders complaining about a bike. You know, he said he always had to adapt to a bike. And of course, Casey was the only rider that could properly do anything on the Ducati before, of course, until recently. So it seems like they've almost got like a kind of Casey Stoner mentality, which is great.
Yeah, in Algarve, what Casey said, and I think it was very interesting. In the end, it's all reduced to an ego thing. Again, the ego emerges as a key factor on that. So Casey said, "Listen, I didn't have the ego big enough." Mm-hmm. To convince Ducati to adapt the bike to my riding style.
The ego thing is an interesting point because, you know, if you look at riders now who, in terms of ego, Pecco doesn't have one. You know, Jack's very down to earth. Jorge Martin is very down to earth, very focused on what he needs to do. I don't know if you can have a perfect team, but it seems like Ducati does have the perfect combination. They've got a great internal structure. They've got great riders who they know it's not about themselves, if that makes sense, to a degree. They know that there's a bigger picture than just personal glory.
Yeah, but at the same time, I have the feeling that they need to do something in the coming future, because especially talking about Jack, it's pretty clear who's the number one and who Ducati will put the not saying the main efforts, but in the end, there's always a number one.
Speaking of Yamaha, it was a difficult weekend for Fabio Quartararo. Strange one, because he couldn't, it was almost like the Valencia last year, he just couldn't really figure it out. You know, he ended the race okay, fifth, but it's been an odd kind of start to his reign as champion. You know, it's not really been all that easy for him. And, you know, looking ahead to next year, when we've got 8 Ducatis on the grid and they're all very, very quick Ducatis, you know, he's not really held back in what he needs from Yamaha. He's in the last few weeks, he said, look, they need to pull their finger out and get this engine sorted. I need power.
Yeah, that's for sure. Because, I mean, if the championship would have last 2 more races, he would probably be in trouble.
Yeah, well, if in the second half of the season, from Styria onwards, the points, Pecco, I think, scored 144 and Fabio 22. The gap at the end of the season was 26. And if had Pecco gone and won at Misano instead of crashing, and then the events of Portugal happened, and then Valencia happened, Pecco would have won the championship by 2 points.
Yeah, so that's why, I mean, it's always ifs and but.
Yeah.
I mean, the direction is going in one way. So that's what Yamaha has to think about it. And I think that in that case, the example of Suzuki can be really crucial for them to don't repeat the same mistakes. I mean, now they know what to do. They need more power.
Yep.
So let they know where to work on.
Yeah. There's probably 2 manufacturers that will be looking at this Jerez test as being vitally important. One of them will be Yamaha, and of course the other one, Honda. We'll talk about Honda in a minute, but Suzuki, you mentioned, disappointing end to Joan Mir's, to what has been a disappointing season for Joan Mir, and he'll be the first to admit that. But fourth in the end, he had some tire troubles, but in his debrief on Sunday, he sounded quite sort of, he sounded flat, dejected. You know, he said he couldn't have done anything. What he said that I found interesting was that he was asked about the championship and he said, I couldn't have done any more this year. And I think that's quite a sad indictment of Suzuki's situation, honestly, because we know how good a rider Juan is.
Yeah, and there's one really, let's say, clear input that there's something not really stable or set, which is that he's always on the fence. When you ask him about the performance, about the perspectives, about what he needs or Suzuki needs to do for next year, he's always on the fence. Thinks that he's in doubt, and we never put him in doubt. But, I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah.
And he always defends himself, saying, no, last Sunday he was pretty clear. I don't care. He didn't use that expression, but was more, let's say, direct. He said, I don't care about the people who thinks that I'm the worst title defender in the history. But nobody told him that. But that's what makes me think that there's something going on his mind.
Yeah, and we know that the silly season for 2023 is in full flow now. We know that deals will be done over the winter, and you know, we've spoken about this before. Juan would be an attractive prospect to quite a few teams, manufacturers, and if he doesn't get what he needs, you know, I wouldn't put it past him to walk away from Suzuki.
Yeah, the problem in Suzuki is that there's a lot of going on. There's not only the bike issues, is that they need to hire a team manager. They need to finally hire a team manager. Mm-hmm. And I spoke with Johan and with his manager, and they need to find out, they want to find out who the team manager will be before signing the contract, especially because they need to speak with this team manager in many different stories, but also about this contract, this hypothetical contract. So let's see, because there's a lot of going on there in Suzuki and for both riders. So
Yeah, the very telling thing for me was on the Friday in Valencia, the team boss press conference, where Shinichi Sahara said, look, the role of team manager was way too much for me, which is, you know, fair enough. Everyone could see that, but the fact he was kind of quite open and public about that.
But the problem is that they should have had a replacement.
Absolutely. Yeah, and you can kind of see where the lack of a team manager, the lack of Brivio really affected Suzuki, and that was on Alex Rins' side of the garage, because he made a lot more mistakes this year than he did last year. You know, and again on Sunday, crashing out of a very, very good position.
There's a disconnection. There's a cut.
Disconnect. Yeah.
There's a cut between the Japanese side of Suzuki and the team.
Yeah,
that's obvious.
Finally, just to wrap up on the race, Honda, because we actually recorded the podcast just too late to discuss the big news. Of course, Marc Marquez's vision problems, and he was ruled out for Valencia and the test. Worrying, because it's the same issues he had back in 2011. And Alberto Puig, you asked Alberto Puig about this at the weekend, and he gave an update. He said that doctors are positive, but we don't really know much else, and it's a waiting game essentially. But this is just a nightmare for Honda, because this Jerez test was so crucial. After all the troubles he had, they needed Mark there. He's not going to be there. You know, Paul Espargaro is going to be very bruised and battered going to that Jerez test after a big, big crash in Valencia. It's a nightmare spell for Honda.
Well, I would say that Alberto said what he said about the doctors being positive just for saying something. At the moment, it's wait and see. And then they had the Paul Airlines crash.
Paul didn't speak to the media for the rest of the day, but I would not be surprised if that was a return of the traction control issues. I just hope things start going well for Honda, because it's been 18 months of absolute hell for the top manufacturer in the World Championship. Just to end, because this of course isn't our season review podcast, but I just wanted to end it on a positive note. You know, what's kind of, you know, reflecting on this season as a whole, what's the one standout moment for you? What's your one kind of the one moment you look back on with fondness from this championship?
Maybe Martin's win.
I think for me, for a slightly different reason, but it was another Austria race. It was the Brad Binder win, and the most ridiculous race we've ever seen. Just because, you know, you get to halfway through a season and you think you've seen everything, and then that happens. It was great fun, but it was we'll have more time over the winter to talk about the season in depth. But Yuri, for now, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for your company on the podcast all year, but of course just in general for being a super cool dude. We'll be back at some point to discuss many things over the winter. We've got testing coming up. Yeah, it might be end of the season, but it's not the end of the work, sadly. But we will be back soon. If you like what you heard, you can listen to all of our other podcasts on all the podcast platforms and read absolutely everything from the season on autosport and motorsport.com. But until the next time, it's a very warm goodbye, and keep looking after yourselves.